Hi, this is Kim Catola. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. You can hear the show live on Sundays at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, and there are many more podcasts for this and all of our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thank you for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Catola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. And now, Kim Catola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
So pleased to have you with us for this edition of Cradle My Heart Radio. I'm Kim Catola, and I am really pleased to be able to bring you our guest this week, Frederica Matthews Green. She is a passionate and articulate voice who has sounded the call to love the mother and love the child as we, the church, answer the problem of facing an unwanted or untimely pregnancy. Her book, Real Choices, remains a cornerstone of thinking in the pregnancy help movement. Frederica's work has appeared in such diverse publications as the Washington Post, Christianity Today, Los Angeles Times, too many to mention, really. And again, she's been a regular commentator for National Public Radio and other media outlets where she's been interviewed by, I think, 700 times. She's published 10 books. She's appeared as a speaker over 500 times, places like Yale, Harvard, Princeton. Frederica, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Oh, thank you, Kim. Wonderful to be with you.
Well, and I want to talk about real choices. I mean, it's not, you're not limited to writing and speaking about the pregnancy help movement. You write and speak brilliantly on issues of faith and faith in the public square. So many, as I said, 10 books that you've published now. But when we think about your book, Real Choices, I think it still articulates the way through the whole problem and the whole mess of the pro-life, pro-choice divide within the church and within our culture. And I want to revisit that book today and familiarize some of our younger listeners who may not be aware of the work that you did and how it stands and how it can still provide guidance for us today. Tell me about writing Real Choices and how that came about.
Yes, I was I was at that time representing an organization called Feminists for Life. This has now become a wonderful organization for the pro-life cause on college campuses. But back then it was really quite small. And one of the things that kept kind of nagging at me was wondering if the work that Pregnancy Care Centers was doing, was it really hitting the center of the target? What were the real reasons that women were having abortions? And I had this idea that if I, you know, sent out a survey to all the pregnancy care centers I could find and tried to interview women who had had abortions, and I even attempted to reach pro-choice people and abortion providers, though didn't find them very responsive. I thought maybe we can make a list of what's number one, what's number two, what are the reasons that women have abortions, and then see if what pregnancy care centers are providing, is that what they need? Is that what they're asking for? So that was my goal, was to try to come right in there at that angle and correlate, make a correlation between the work of pregnancy care centers and what women would say in the recovery room of an abortion clinic. This is the reason I did this. Were we really solving this problem?
And it's a fascinating answer that you came up with as the research unfolded. But part of that was this famous quote that you wrote for Policy Review magazine that is still being quoted today, often not attributed to you. It's just become kind of part of the cultural landscape, if you will, about why women are having abortions. Share that quote with us and maybe tell the story of that. That thing has taken on a life of its own, too, I'm sure.
It sure has, and it's so gratifying to me as a writer to realize that there was something I put out there that proved so useful that people wanted to repeat it again and again. And the line in this article I wrote in Policy Review a long time ago was a woman doesn't want an abortion like she wants an ice cream cone or a Porsche. She wants an abortion like an animal caught in a trap wants to gnaw off its own leg. I said abortion is a means of a self-violating, self-destructive, desperate grasp for liberation, for freedom. And it doesn't serve the mother or the child, obviously. It doesn't really solve her problem.
And I won't ascribe to you an agenda when you wrote those words, but I think you were somewhat surprised that the first to pick it up was Planned Parenthood.
Yes, yes, I was very surprised. It was in the Planned Parenthood Action Newsletter. It was in the Pro-Choice Network News. There were pro-choice columnists were quoting it. I was very surprised. It did take on a life of its own, and suddenly I was running into this quote all kinds of different places. Sometimes by people who presumed that I was pro-choice and that I was defending the pro-choice point of view. One of the conclusions I drew from that is that we can see that people who are in favor of abortion don't delude themselves in terms of thinking this is something that women want, that they realize just as well as we do that it is self-destructive, it is painful, and it's a desperate attempt to solve her problem, usually because she feels abandoned. So there was that little bit of common ground there where I realized that people that are our opponents politically, nevertheless, they grasp this basic truth that this is not liberation, that abortion actually hurts women.
We're speaking of Frederica Matthews Green, the author of this seminal quote about how women don't choose it because they want it as something that is desired in a positive way. Women choose abortion because they have no choice, really. But she said it, of course, in such a much more articulate way than I just encapsulated it. But Frederica, as we now are, I think, was that in the early 1990s, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
So here we are, all these years later. Tell me your perspective on how well the church, how well the pregnancy help movement is addressing that need, how well the average bystander understands that they have a role to play in solving this problem in our culture. What's your perspective on it here in the year 2015?
I think over the course of a couple of decades, that the work of pregnancy care centers and pro-lifers in general has become so much more professional, so much more accurate and careful, and it's just done with a degree of professionalism. I guess I keep returning to that word that really wasn't there at the beginning. You know, at the beginning we had people whose hearts were full and who desired to help, and it was sort of a kitchen table movement. Just giving whatever you could get your hands on, whatever you could do to help. And I think that this step upward in professionalism has served the movement very well, and it has served women very well. I especially like that so many pregnancy care centers now are expanding into sonograms and even prenatal care in some cases, that they are truly becoming health clinics so that they are able to offer a whole range of things that women need. Analyzing what those needs are and meeting those needs is the most important thing. And I guess one of the things she wanted to talk about was that when I did my survey for Real Choices, I found that, in fact, it wasn't material things that women were asking for. I assumed when I got a list of, you know, what are the reasons you had abortions, I thought women would say mostly, I needed money. Or I needed a place to live, or I needed, maybe I needed a lawyer to help me, you know, navigate an adoption. And I didn't find that at all. I found that over and over what women said, the reason I had the abortion was because somebody that I love told me that's what I should do. That it was pressure either from the father of the child most of the time, sometimes her own mother though. In any case, it was a problem that, you can't solve that problem just by raising more money, you know. It's an interpersonal relationship problem. And that made the need for pregnancy care services shift. It wasn't clear what we can do to make her boyfriend be more loving to her, for example. So that presented a whole other set of problems, I think, for pregnancy care centers and those who want to help pregnant women to consider.
So it sounds like what the pregnancy help centers are being called to do is to come into relationship and make motherhood a feasible proposition for women.
Yes, yes. I think there are really two points there. One, I'll start with the second one, which is making motherhood a feasible proposition. I think we also need to make adoption a feasible proposition. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when mm-hmm. I received surveys back from pregnancy care centers saying, when I'd asked, what do you need to do a better job? Number one on the list was, we need to find a way to make adoption seem feasible. That in so many cases, that would be the best outcome for the mother and the child. But the mothers were set mostly on abortion. They felt like that abortion was a more loving choice for the child than adoption would be. And that was a terrible problem that they were facing then. And that mothering the child as a single parent is certainly not impossible, but it's a lot of times adoption would be better for that child and for the mother. So it's a trap that I wouldn't want to see pregnancy care centers fall into every single time that they think of single motherhood as the best solution. In fact, I wish that there would be a way that we could recover more respect for marriage, that sometimes somebody gets pregnant and they get married and it turns out to be a good marriage. So to ascertain whether do you have to totally write off the father or the child, is he that terrible a person? Or is there a possibility that out of this surprise, the surprise of this child appearing in your life, maybe you could build a marriage for a lifetime that starts with that event? So I would like to see people explore marriage a little bit more than we tend to do.
What a great way to characterize it. It's a surprise pregnancy. You know, we all struggle with, is it an unplanned pregnancy? Well, God, you know, had it planned. I mean, it's not. Is it an untimely pregnancy? Well, you know, but it's a surprise. I mean, really, that's kind of neutral, tending toward positive. I like that a lot. You know, part of the work that you did was to gather women who had had abortions and talk with them. And I think this was some groundbreaking work. We still are having trouble coaxing women who need help after abortion into the light to be able to deliver that help to them. Part of the reason that we started this program 2-3 years ago was to give women a chance to interact with us live on the radio in a way that would be healing so that they could talk about their experiences. And, you know, it's probably not surprising, not that many are willing to share, even anonymously. It's a tough thing to make that invitation to women. Talk about these post-abortion listening groups that you put together.
Oh, yes. I went around the country and in 7 major cities, I was able to pull together small groups of women who had had abortions and just anonymously over the course of an evening with, you know, some cupcakes and coffee, I asked them, why did you have the abortion? I was trying to get behind the reason of what the need was, and so I could help pregnancy care centers try to identify the need and then be able to meet it. And so my focus in the groups was not precisely on post-abortion pain. It was on pre-abortion stress, trying to identify the cause of the abortion. But the pain was so evident. As you well know, we saw many tears in these groups. That it is the aftermath of abortion that just tears women up. And they don't see that going into it, usually. I remember one woman saying, you really don't even want to think about it when you find out you're pregnant. It's like there's a tarantula on your arm, and you just want to knock it off. So there's sort of a panicky thinking of fix this problem right away as fast as possible, even do it before I have time to think about it, because if I think about it, I might not be able to do it. I have to rush into the abortion. But then there's an awful lot of lifetime afterwards that you regret that hurried and often very pressured by other people, pressured choice. One of the other women I talked to said, everybody was telling me they would be there for me if I had the abortion. Nobody said they would be there for me if I chose to raise the child. So that's quite a strong nonverbal message that women receive.
Well, and I think, you know, maybe some of us feel like, well, if I count the cost, I can't make that commitment. I'm not sure I can be there for you for 18 years. So, I mean, we understand that. But, wow, you've presented so many things that I think, you know, if you're listening with our conversation today with Frederica Matthews Green, and you're thinking, oh, is that what women need? Well, maybe I could step up and be part of the answer. You know, that's also part of our mandate here. I speak for pregnancy centers, as I know you do, Frederica, also for their fundraisers. And the theme I love to strike is that, you know, the abortion industry, if you will, I believe, exploits that fear of the tarantula on the arm. They say, yep, we can rush through this, and no problem, it'll be like it never happened. And so the average person who's not engaged in that conversation or in that process says, well, I don't think that's right. Wait a minute. Something should happen here. But they don't see a way to become part of the solution. And I really liken it to bullying. You know, if the bystanders stand up, then the bully shrinks. So for the average person not personally involved in a problem pregnancy or a surprise pregnancy, would say, I can be part of an answer. I don't think it's right that children should have to pay with their lives because a woman is in crisis. I can be part of the answer. But, Frederica, we're not asking people to become, you know, sort of co-parents and take on an 18-year responsibility. Let's talk about some of these ways that people can become part of the solution.
I think in many cases what women are looking for is just moral support, just encouragement. The voice in opposition to the voice that's saying, this is a catastrophe, this is a tarantula, take care of it immediately, the voice that says, no, you can do this. You know what? Other women have done this. If you look, when you look back on this 20 years from now, you'll be so happy, you'll be so glad that you let this child live. Somebody who can give her encouragement and really give her strength to do what is right, to do what she knows is right. I talked to so many women who described situations under which they became pregnant that were just horrifying. I remember when she was a teenager and the father of the child was the dad in the family that lived next door. So when you think about a situation like that, how can you tell her to continue this pregnancy when you know who the father is? There are situations that sound just impossible to resolve. But even that woman said to me, I just needed somebody to stand by me. She said, she held up her finger. She said, if one person had stood by me, I would have had that baby. That so often women are just looking for one person to stand next to them and face down all these other voices that are saying, this is a catastrophe, you have to have an abortion right away, and give her that moral support and encouragement. You know, when I discovered in my research that most people said the reason I had the abortion was because of pressure from either the father or the child or from her own parents. It sounds like a problem that you can't solve. You can't, pregnancy care center can't make that boy be a better dad. But the women kept telling me it didn't matter. It didn't matter who it was at this point. I just needed a friend. And that is what pregnancy care centers do. They provide that volunteer, that trained volunteer, who can be maybe the first person this girl has seen that is saying to her, this can work. We can work this out. It's not the end of the world. It's very distressing when you first learn about it, but time is going to pass. And let's think for a long-term solution. There's been, abortion has been legal in America for how many years now? 40-something years. And there's been so many political attempts to pass a law or change a law. Doesn't look like we make a lot of progress. But abortion can be prevented every single day. If we just had enough volunteers who would be willing to say, for this one woman, I will stand next to her. I will be her friend. I will encourage her just for the course of the pregnancy. That's what women told me they needed. They needed a friend.
It's so touching to hear you talk about this, Frederica, as a person who experienced abortion. And, you know, I wasn't poor. I wasn't uneducated. I didn't fit a stereotype of a needy person. And yet, I lacked that critical social support that you're talking about. I also didn't have that one person. And that resonates through our hearts as women who made this choice. Because, you know, we see that out of our ignorance and out of our desperation, we did the wrong thing. We have a moral obligation to be responsible to our children, and we know this as women deep in our hearts. But if we have no help to do it, we not only become perpetrators of violence to the children, but we become victims of it as well. And your insights, not only as a writer and speaker on this, but you've also, you're a certified natural childbirth educator.
Oh, yeah.
And did that for almost a decade or more, and prepared couples for childbirth. And it's this part of your heart, I think, that really comes through. I want to read something from Real Choices that you wrote that I think, you know, I don't know if we have any pro-choice listeners of this program, but I know that everybody who listens to this program engages with people who have a pro-choice worldview and who sincerely believe that a woman needs the right to choose. What you wrote in Real Choices in the introduction says, "My opposition to abortion springs from a conviction that it is ugly and degrading to women. Years spent as a natural childbirth teacher, devising my own method of pain relief and becoming a home birth mom myself, wrought in me a deep conviction that pregnancy and birth comprise a healthy process that should be as much as possible left alone. Pregnancy and birth link together women all over the world and throughout all time. That earthy, vital process is the most elemental symbol of women's strength." And Frederica, yesterday, there was in the news, or recently, in the Washington Post, a story about an abortion business that's going to offer women fluffy robes and a cup of tea and a spa-like atmosphere.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, when you talk about the reality that it is always a degrading process, because you went on to say disrupting it by thrusting tools deep into her body is as obscene as pouring dirty motor oil into a pristine mountain lake.
Mm-hmm.
"I oppose abortion because it violates women's bodies even more deeply than rape does. Even more hideous violation, it brings grisly death into the very house of life." I don't know what more you can say on that to reach a heart hardened by the idea that abortion is a need or an answer. But tell me about this understanding that you gained about how every abortion degrades a woman's heart and soul and spirit.
Yes, it founded, I guess, in the realization of how really beautiful the process of pregnancy and birth is. And I saw that beauty and the mystery of that beauty more and more deeply the more I learned about it. And I know that may be confusing or surprising to people who have, you know, had a hospital birth where they were medicated, they didn't feel anything, and it sure didn't look beautiful and mysterious to them. But it's something I felt that I glimpsed and then began to really savor and understand deeply the more I got involved in natural childbirth. And there is something truly hideous about abortion in that it violates that in a violent way. It interferes, but does a mechanical disruption of this beautiful and mysterious act of creating new life. We tend to not honor that and recognize the mystery of it as much as we should. That it's not just that having babies is great and it's fun to have a baby and babies are cute, but this is creating new life that God allows us to partner with Him in creating a new person in this world. That should create deep awe in our hearts and gratitude that God has allowed us to participate in this. Not something that should be taken lightly or for granted. And I hope that even people who don't quite understand why I would say that I see such beauty and mystery in pregnancy and childbirth, even if they don't really get it, maybe they can recognize that someone could feel that way, and maybe there is something more to it than they can glimpse just from the outside.
Well, we so appreciate
something precious we're trying to protect.
Absolutely. So appreciate your heart and your words today. Fredrika Matthews Green, our guest here at Cradle My Heart Radio. In the minute and a half that we have remaining, I know that you're a person of faith and deep conviction, and I'd like to ask if you would just please close us in prayer.
Yes, I'd be glad to. Dear Lord Jesus, I ask you to bless every person hearing this, every mother who's lost a child, every father who's lost a child. Thank you for taking all those children into your home, into your mansion, where you can keep them until they are finally reunited with their parents one day. Please bless these hungering hearts, these hearts that are in such pain. Thank you, dear Lord Jesus, for all who are listening to this broadcast, and perfect us, complete us in your beauty. Amen.
Amen. Fredrika Matthews Green, author of Real Choices, which is in its third edition. And yes, there's a Kindle edition available. You can get that tonight or today, this afternoon, whenever you're hearing this broadcast or podcast. And Fredrika, we so appreciate the work that you've done, the thinking that you've provided on this, and your time joining us today. Thank you so much for being with us here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you, Kim.
And stay with us. Coming up here on Faith Radio, your calls as we discuss this week's top news stories on the life issue and your chance to join the discussion on Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
So glad to have you with us for this live portion of Cradle My Heart Radio tonight. Thank you for joining us. I hope that it has been a restful Sabbath day for you if you're hearing us live here on our Faith Radio affiliates, and listening perhaps to New Vision FM or The Bridge, so many great radio stations that are bringing you Cradle My Heart Radio, and we do appreciate each one and each one listening tonight. You know, it's a challenge to deal with this topic every week, and I don't say that as a complaint, but merely to acknowledge that there's no shortage of stories about abortion, about the cause of life, about the pro-life message. In the news every week, there is no shortage of stories. That's not the challenge. Keeping it fresh, finding compelling content. The challenge is, of course, guarding our hearts and not becoming discouraged, because abortion is still happening at such a common rate. There are still a million abortions happening every year, give or take a few hundred or a few hundred or a few thousand, I should say. And someone said to me today in our Sunday school class that it must feel good to be, you know, making a difference and to be saving lives. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to warn against the dangers of abortion. We're trying to lead people to make a better choice with everything that we do on this broadcast. But the challenge sometimes comes in, you know, when you stop and you say, how are we doing? Are we gaining more listeners? Is the message getting through? Are lives actually being saved? Sometimes the battle feels very slow. But we know it belongs to the Lord, and we're here for a spiritual purpose. And that can't be measured in earthly ways. And I want to talk about that tonight, because there was an article that appeared in Cosmopolitan magazine that we've got linked at facebook.com/cradlemyheart, our social media site on Facebook, our page. And I hope that you can go there, if not while we're talking tonight, at some point this week and read the article and get a sense of the caricature that's being put forward about the work that's being done to save lives in the pregnancy health centers. Megan Winter is a reporter who went undercover at the Heartbeat International Conference last year in South Carolina. And I met Megan and had the chance to talk with her. I wasn't quoted in her article and didn't interview me formally. So that conference, and I also, you know, had conversations with her, and it's just, it's really difficult when the work that we are doing to help others is caricatured as something else. The magazine article for Cosmopolitan magazine, and again, maybe we could consider the source. Megan actually was writing for an outlet called, she was commissioned by the Nation Institute, and this was published in partnership with the Investigative Fund. I won't say she was commissioned. I don't know that detail, but Cosmopolitan magazine published this in partnership with the Investigative Fund at the Nation Institute. And it's very difficult to read it and not sense the agenda to paint the pregnancy help movement as something that it isn't, as something that's only existing to try to manipulate vulnerable women into converting to the Christian faith. The headline of the article, Save the Mother, Save the Baby, an inside look at a pregnancy center conference. And then the cut line, the subheadline, is a quote, "We might be the very first face of Christ that these girls ever see." I mean, I think, you know, I've been a presenter at the Heartbeat International Conference for a number of years on a number of different topics. And it's unashamedly a Christian organization. There's no problem with that. But when you're looking at it from an unspiritual point of view and trying to discern whether there is some sort of harmful, dangerous agenda afoot, and you come away with the conclusion that no one really wants to help women, all that they're trying to do is recruit for the church, that's upsetting to me, because I think that it's off base, first of all. I don't think that that is true. Women are being helped every day in these pregnancy help centers. Every day. It's a movement that is growing because it effectively helps women and saves the lives of their children. And yet, laced into the article with, you know, quotes from the keynote speakers and descriptions of the workshops and interviews with some of the people who were attending are the supposed facts. So Megan Winter writes that for decades, reproductive rights advocates have accused pregnancy centers of shaming or scaring women out of using contraception and having abortions. In 2006, she writes, Representative Harry Waxman of California published a report detailing how pregnancy centers used deceptive marketing and provided inaccurate health information. And just this March, NAREL Pro-Choice released the results of its own investigation, she writes, showing how CPCs, crisis pregnancy centers, misled and misinformed women. Quoting from that, women are entitled to accurate, comprehensive, and unbiased medical information with which they can make their own decisions, NAREL said in a report on CPCs back in January. And still, the federal government in at least 11 states currently fund pregnancy centers, including Heartbeat affiliates. Well, if you're reporting on this as a fact, as to what's actually happening in terms of, you know, reproductive rights, in terms of women's reproductive health, how can you omit the detail that Planned Parenthood is receiving $1.5 billion of taxpayer money from 2010 to 2012? How can you omit that fact? And believe me, it's a drop in the bucket. What the pregnancy centers are receiving in terms of government funding is a drop in the bucket. And it's generally for programs like abstinence-based education, and things do not relate directly to the abortion counseling aspect of what pregnancy centers do. So I would love to hear your reaction. If you happen to have seen the Cosmopolitan piece, our phones are open right now at 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003. Perhaps you are a volunteer or maybe a donor, or maybe you are familiar with the Pregnancy Resource Center in your community, and you would like to respond to somebody who doesn't know anything about the work that's being done. You know, there's this sense that because this is a Christian outreach and because pregnancy centers are frank about calling themselves ministries, not all do, but many do, that this is more of a cult than a faith-based community organization. You would feel very differently about an organization that you saw as a cult versus one that I told you was a faith-based community outreach, wouldn't you? And I'm not one for dressing things up with rhetoric to make them seem what they are not. But it's very apt to call pregnancy resource centers faith-based community outreaches. And yet, that's turned upside down in this article and in others like it. Actually, this article doesn't go as far as some of the other publications that are out there that are attacking the work of the pregnancy help movement. Some of those writing against the pregnancy help movement, would lead you to believe that there's an adoption mill that's happening for profit. There's no proof of it, but that would frighten a woman if she thinks that she's going to be exploited and not allowed to make an independent decision. 800-811-3003 is our number. But there, it's more subtle also. One of the sub-headlines in the Cosmopolitan piece, protecting women from abortions as, quote, an adult tells a child not to touch a hot stove, end quote. Well, this is a volunteer who was using an analogy to talk to the reporter about, you know, and asked, what is it that you do? She wasn't somebody who was a spokesperson for the organization. She wasn't someone who was expected to have talking points. She gave an everyday analogy. And the result, though, is that, oh, this is a movement that is, what's the word that I want? Not pandering, but that is patronizing pregnant women as unable to make their own decisions and as children who have to be steered away from a hot stove. It matters to be portrayed in that light. If you're a woman who is reading Cosmopolitan magazine, let's say that you are a young adult. I don't know what their average readership is, but I'm sure they have a lot of adult readers in their 20s, women who are sexually active because that's what that magazine promotes, that's the way to be a young woman, is to be sexually active and sexually attractive. So if you're reading this and you come upon an article that says, well, whatever you do, if you become pregnant, don't go to that cult because they're getting government money to mislead you. That's a problem. There's a real problem there. 800-811-3003 is our number. Please let me know your thoughts. 800-811-3003. Maybe, again, if you're working with or affiliated with a pregnancy resource center and you'd like to paint a different picture, we'll give you a chance to do that too. Our phones are open. 800-811-3003 is our number. We'll take a short break and then we'll be back with more. Again, you can go to cradlemyheart.org and link to our Facebook page where you'll find the article from Cosmopolitan magazine that we're discussing tonight. Stay with us here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
We're so glad to have you listening tonight. If you missed the earlier portion of the broadcast with our guest, Frederica Matthews Green, be sure to visit CradleMyHeart.org this week and look for the podcast. And yes, you can subscribe to our podcast in iTunes if you like to do that and put it on your device for listening when your schedule allows. That's great. We have everything archived right there on our website, too, at CradleMyHeart.org. And tonight's interview portion, I should say, the program began with an interview with Frederica Matthews Green, who wrote Real Choices back in the 1990s, taking a look at what do women actually need when they are seeking an abortion. And she found that they are in need of social support. And that's why in this article we're discussing tonight here on the live portion of the broadcast, it's in Cosmopolitan Magazine, was published this week. It's titled Save the Mother, Save the Baby, An Inside Look at a Pregnancy Center Conference. Megan Winter wrote a piece, by the way, for New Yorker Magazine last year, in which she told first-person narratives of abortion experiences. And to a person, they were expressing the fact that abortion is difficult but necessary and something that women do not regret. Megan Winter is an abortion proponent. She believes that women need abortion, that abortion needs to remain legal in order to benefit women. It's quite clear in her writing that this is where she stands. But she went undercover at a pregnancy help movement conference for Heartbeat International last year in South Carolina and published her findings as an undercover investigative reporter. It was known to many of us that she was there, and as I mentioned earlier, I had a conversation with Megan completely off the record, and we were just riding the shuttle bus back to the hotel one night. I told her about my book, Cradle My Heart, How I Found God's Love After My Abortion. I told her, and she did write this in her article, that when someone shares at a pregnancy help center conference or elsewhere the fact that we have had an abortion for the benefit of others, we know that within the pro-life movement, generally speaking, we will not be judged. And certainly in the pregnancy help movement, we will not be judged because a part of the outreach is offering post-abortion care. That's where the idea of post-abortion care really began, as women were reaching out to other women to help them in surprise and problem pregnancies. They found that many times women had already had abortions, and they were trying to avoid it, but they found themselves, you know, within the same set of circumstances, and so they were faced with the same choice. So post-abortion care was being offered as early as the mid-1980s. Less than 10 years after abortion became legal, through the pregnancy help movement. People like Linda Cochran and others were the pioneers of this. I think that it's always surprising, if you have a pro-choice worldview, to think that people who are trying to save women from the devastation of abortion would also be the ones who would not judge women but would offer a hand to them for healing also. It was very surprising to me how warmly I was welcomed by these same people in the time of my life when I was making that transition from having chosen abortion and thinking that made me a pro-choice person to understanding the truth that abortion is never a choice that anyone should have to make. So as we're talking about how Megan Winter portrays our movement, she writes this for Cosmopolitan Magazine. During mealtimes, attendees sat together in the ballroom. Practiced at exuding kindness, women poured each other iced tea, traded self-deprecations, and left their purses in each other's care. Before we ate, we waited for at least 20 minutes as speakers blessed the food by invoking God in the battle to make abortion illegal. You know, I mean, there's nothing necessarily derogatory here, but practiced at exuding kindness, why not just say, I found the women to be kind? Or are you hinting that perhaps this is mere veneer and insincere? There's a tone as you read the overall article, particularly as she comes to her conclusion. Megan Winters writes about how the morning after the conference, she sat with women from Kentucky and four young women from Kentucky who had invited them invited her, that is, I should say, to their hotel room for breakfast. She'd met one of them at a workshop, and they had invited her to dinner, making sure that she didn't sit alone since she was attending the conference alone. And so in the hotel room, they told me, no one will ever love you the way Christ loves you. A soft-spoken blonde wearing dangly cross-shaped earrings said she deprived her husband of something because she wasn't a virgin when they married. She spoke with quiet but firm conviction. She didn't emphasize any one of her claims that premarital sex is a mistake or abortion is murder, but presented a whole worldview where all beliefs are interlocked. For almost an hour, the women described how feeling Christ's love carried them through moments of darkness like loneliness, family turmoil, struggles with self-esteem, and loss. One woman, a nurse, explained, "Christ's love is always there. It's unconditional. I never feel lonely." And then the last line of her article says, "I imagined them offering the same explanation to women looking for help with their unplanned pregnancy." You know, if this is all the pregnancy help movement did, we would be doing what James tells Christians not to do in his epistle. He says we can't just say, "Well, off with you, and I wish you well. God bless you." He says that's absolutely wrong. And in our hearts, we know that, and we don't really even have to be told that. But and for her to portray that this is what the pregnancy help movement does because these women shared their faith with her, I think is wrong and really evil. I don't think it's too strong to call that evil. I mean, it's one thing if this reporter went to this conference, found it to be overtly religious, and had a problem with that. That, you know, that's fine. But to say that this is all that the pregnancy help movement does is to just sit and talk with people and try to convert them to Christ, it's a mischaracterization. There is an offer of the gospel message if a woman is open to it in a pregnancy help center, and these are matters that centers take very seriously and train their volunteers for, that it would not be a manipulation, it would not be exploiting a woman in her vulnerable moment. There is actual help being offered, though. There are parenting classes. Many of the centers have help with clothing and diapers and formula. There can be offers of material help, depending upon what the individual circumstances are. And that can mean anything from help with finding a job to finding a housing to finding transportation. The idea that it's simply proselytizing is wrong. And I think it's very unfortunate and a very unbalanced bit of reporting that Cosmopolitan magazine presented it as it did. Because it makes the women who attended and were sharing their faith seem like they're just members of a cult, not discerning, not even thinking it through that what they're doing is possibly harmful to women because it fails to meet their actual needs. You know, to their credit, Heartbeat International, and our phones are open tonight at 800-811-3003. Our time is growing short, but call us if you want to join in, 800-811-3003. To their credit, Heartbeat International praised Megan Winter, saying that in a news release that she had shown a great deal of courage and integrity by entering our world, which in many ways breaks the mold for a pro-choice journalist. That's a quote from Heartbeat International President Peggy Hartshorn, who said her article shows that she experienced firsthand the care and compassion and quiet conviction of the women and men who work every day to empower women to make the healthiest decision for everyone involved in an unexpected pregnancy. And so I have personally interviewed Peggy Hartshorn on a number of occasions and had the opportunity to sit and talk with her in many different settings. And she's one of the most gracious women I've ever met. And she stayed true to her character in answering this very snarky article, really a hit piece that Cosmopolitan magazine published in partnership with the investigative fund at the Nation Institute this week. But Peggy also pointed out that Ms. Winter presents an unbalanced representation, that is, of the body of existing research related to the physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual effects of abortion. Peggy Hartshorne is a PhD, and she understands the need for thorough research and thorough reporting and thorough care in the ministry that she helped found. And she also mentions how Megan's information on the government funding of certain aspects of pregnancy help organizations failed to compare to the $1.5 billion of taxpayer dollars going to Planned Parenthood. So go to cradlemyheart.org on Facebook, and you'll see the article, and maybe you'll leave a comment for us, and we'll pick up on it next week. I hope that you can join us for our interview portion next week. We're going to be featuring Sherry Rigby. Sherry played the mother of Hannah in the film October Baby, which has been out for a couple of years now. And her dramatic story of how being cast in that movie brought her own pain of abortion to completion is now being shared in her book, Sherry Rigby's first book, Beautifully Flawed. And you will be so encouraged by meeting Sherry and seeing what God has been doing in her life to make her dreams come true as she has been following Him in faith. That's our prayer for you, that you will follow Him in faith as He leads you to new life. Thank you so much for listening. Visit us at cradlemyheart.org for resources and program notes and more. And join us again next week. We'll be here. Remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart. For more information about this show, you can visit our Cradle My Heart program page on myfaithradio.com.